Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
This is Sell or Die. Real world sales talk, no bullshit, no tricks, just how to make sales whether you're in Pittsburgh or Prague.
Or Peoria. We're interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development, and we're doing it live. How come live? Because, dude, you make your sales calls live. There's no pre-taping, and there's no pre-taping of your sales seminar.
We're taking your sales questions, so send them to us, Twitter, at Gittimer, or at Jen in a New York Minute. Maybe you want to email your question. You're not on Twitter. Well,
yeah,
get on Twitter.
You maybe
whatever.
You
or maybe you even want to advertise on our show.
Yeah.
You can email those questions and inquiries to sellordie@gittimer.com.
Reading every single one of your questions and every single word in a clear and concise way is our man behind the glass, the glass man, our producer, Doug Branson.
I think I'll be okay.
or glass butt. Yeah, because you don't want to say ass, like glass ass. You don't want
to
say that.
Yeah, good evening to both of you. Ass. A reminder to our listeners, you can listen to us live on Wednesdays at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. Help wonderful salespeople just like yourself find us. Jeffrey, Jennifer, this is our first show in our newly revamped studio space.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Doug, it is the spitting image of your classic capability.
It is freaking awesome. Well, that's all I have to say.
And Chris, I'm sure Chris did nothing to help.
Director
Chris
was hanging out.
Integral in the process. And it's all in service of getting us ready to go live on YouTube and Facebook video. So that's coming up.
Whoa. I better sit up straighter.
Yeah, there you go.
I better wear a better t-shirt.
I like that elephant shirt. It's so cute.
Yep. And I'm wearing long sleeves even though it's 88 degrees out in Charlotte because it's freezing ass cold in this place. After we leave, Doug comes in and hangs meat.
Well, I got to get a little extra income when I can. It's all about making that sale.
I got it. So we got a spectacular show tonight. We're going to be talking to one of the best salespeople I've ever met. My buddy and professional wrestler, former professional wrestler, retired professional wrestler, the great Nikita Koloff. He was known as the Russian Nightmare, and he will join us tonight in the studio.
Plus, if you watch the news or read blogs, you can't go 1 minute without hearing or seeing something on millennials. So we're here to help unravel the mystery of sales for millennials and the mystery of millennials for sales managers.
Oh, yeah. So we have no time to waste. There's money out there to be made, and we want to make it and help you make it. So it's time to sell or die.
All right, you guys are hot.
I can't wait for you to hear our talk with the inspiring Nikita Koloff. He's unbelievable, but we want to answer your sales questions first.
Yeah, we want to tease you just a little bit. You have to listen to some answers before we give you the great Nikita.
It's because you come first on Sell or Die. That's why. So I want you to remember that. But speaking of first, Doug, who's first?
Oh, my God.
First up from reddit.com/r/sales is username, hello, can you hear me now?
Oh, my God.
Hello, can you hear me now? Right.
Did you know that guy switched from Verizon to Sprint?
I saw
that. And there's billboards all over the place.
I saw that. That was a big get for them, I think.
I think it was. Hats off to the guy from Verizon because he made a bloody fortune.
Yep.
And then he made another fortune.
I'm telling you, opportunistic is the word that comes to mind there. All right.
Well, only AT&T is left. Maybe they'll outbid the people.
All right. Well, hello. Can you hear me now? Writes, hey, guys, I just started my first sales job at a voiceover IP startup, and I have to make cold calls at times. Regular calls I can manage, but I can't get past this feeling that I'm just nagging these people, mainly because that's how I feel when I get a call. Can you give me some tips, please?
Be friendly, be happy, be willing to take no for an answer. Everybody makes a cold call every once in a while, and your job is not to make a sale on that line. It's basically to make a connection and make an appointment.
If you feel like you're offering something of value, then you're not going to feel like you're nagging them. You're going to feel like you need to get through to them because you want to help them. And once you have that belief in your product, you'll feel that way. So my recommendation is to figure out why you signed up for that job.
This is what I tell people. Go ask 10 of your customers why they buy from you. List down all those reasons. And when you call someone brand new, say, hey, we don't know each other, but and I represent this voice over IP thing. Would you like to know why the last 10 people took mm-hmm. my offer?
Yeah, I like that.
And that way you've engaged them and you don't feel like you're pushy, but you are.
All right, next question comes from Azazel the Great. And Azazel the Great is looking for some tips on great upselling. They write, I work at an inbound sales call center and we talk to tool truck guys. I'm having issues figuring out when the best time is to pitch the products on promotion. Should I do it mid-call or should I do it at the tail end of the call when we wrap everything up? Should I try to sell more discounted items or try to learn all of the products more to try to pitch them?
Hi, Mr. Jones. My name is Jeffrey, and I want to make certain that I get you every wrench you need, but please make sure to remind me before I'm done my call that I've got a special deal today, and I want to make sure I tell you about it. Now, tell me what it is you need. And I've already talked to
you
already
set it up.
Told the guy I'm going to pitch
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I like that. You've set it up. You let them know it's coming. And
exactly.
maybe even they're going to ask you about it
yeah.
rather than you have to chime in and be like, oh, remember that promotional thing
way,
I told you
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
yeah, exactly.
It's like when you're on an airplane and the flight attendant comes on just when you really don't want to hear anything and she annoys the shit out of you by telling you about a special deal that I've already heard 500 times.
On your
in
last
conjunction
500
with
airplanes.
Barclays Bank, we have a credit card.
Credit
you get 40,000 miles. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but how cool would it be if they started off the plane and they said, and just when you're least expecting it and don't want to hear from us again,
exactly.
we're going to give you the best offer of your life.
We're going to give you the sales pitch that we make money from, but we don't tell anybody. I don't like that whole deal.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Pocket Sked, and Pocket Sked wants some feedback on an email pitch. All right. So I'm going to read you this entire email pitch, and
I'll be paying attention. I swear
well,
to God.
Well, you have it in front of you, so
that's oh,
wow.
I see,
I'm
see,
glad
see,
you
okay.
printed this one for
Whoa,
us. Thanks,
we
worked
for another coffee company.
All right. Well, hello, Freddie. Thanks for your time today on the phone. It was a real pleasure discussing coffee, and congratulations on the upcoming Patchville location. Coffee is no doubt a top priority for Jankies. And of course, all of these are substitutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's such an essential part of the breakfast experience. Coffee sets the tone for the rest of the meal, and customers notice. Yeah. You're going to be very busy setting up Patchville, so let XYZ Coffee Company help you get your entire coffee service up and running every step of the way. I'd like to host you at our office tasting room or visit you on site for a tasting, and our wholesale trainer, Brenda, will join us for an in-depth demo of the training we offer as a free service. I will follow up with a phone call on Thursday to schedule a testing. Thanks, John Johnson, XYZ Coffee Company. And then he lists the website and the telephone number. Your thoughts on that email pitch?
This is written by a millennial. They want to try to
that's
make the
sale. That's coming up.
I know. So I'm going to give you the example right now. This is a lazy salesperson's pitch. He's trying to sell this on an email instead of trying to engage the customer as to why. Coffee is the single most profitable item on your menu besides Coca-Cola. Why would you not want to say, if you're looking for more profit, you need to sell more coffee, and I have the profit answer and the perfect coffee, call me. Done.
I love that. I don't know if this is just the formatting because of wherever it came from.
It's horrible.
But there's no, it's like one
Dude.
Long paragraph.
Right.
If someone said this to me.
No, that was me.
Listen, I'm just telling you, I gave you the answer.
Oh, okay.
Listen to the answer. Rip up your email. Pick up the damn phone. Send the email. Then call the guy on the phone.
No, this is a follow-up, it sounds like. Thanks for your time on the phone. It was a pleasure discussing coffee.
Right.
To me, it's just a little long. Like, I don't, it's like so
I don't
much.
Want to hear it.
I have time to read an email for a second if I barely know you. So give me a few points,
I know
one
you're
line
be
of pleasantry,
very busy. Like,
a little
seriously?
Bullets. I need some bullet action. Give me how I'm going to benefit from this. Like you said, profit, perfect coffee, customers who are more happy.
Done.
Boom, done.
I like it.
We're done, Doug.
We're done with questions.
Give it to me in a New York minute. That's what I want.
Yeah, hurry the hell up.
Well,
damn
we're done with questions for
pissing
tonight.
Me off
but if you have a sales question, if you want to piss Jeffrey or Jennifer off with your sales question.
Come on, piss us off.
Bring it on.
We want more dumb questions.
Email us.
No, they're not dumb questions.
Right.
Not
you know what?
I love their questions.
Oh, yeah.
They're great questions.
I heard teachers tell me all my life, there's no such thing as a dumb question. And the kid asks a question, I go, that's pretty stupid.
You know what? I want everyone to send in their questions, even if you think it's dumb.
And hurry up.
Yeah, sell or die.
Because we can make fun of the question without making fun of you.
Right. Okay, anyway.
You can have the username, not a dumb question.
Yeah.
Email your questions.
At Reddit.
Sell or die at getemer.com. You can post them on Reddit. We'll grab them from there. Or you could tweet Jeffrey or Jennifer. I know you're already following them on Twitter.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I won't
hell yeah.
That.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
Don't tweet me at getemer.com. Don't tweet me at Gittimer.
Oh. What? You want them to tweet you.
So here's the deal. I'm going to introduce my first guest because he's been a friend of mine for a long, long time. In fact, almost since he was still wrestling. Nikita Koloff is one of the premier early wrestlers of all, actually a middle wrestler. He wasn't the early wrestlers in the 40s and 50s. He was a wrestler in the 80s when wrestling had Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors and the Rock and Roll Express, all the guys that I love to watch. For those of you who don't watch wrestling, let me share a secret with you. The outcomes are fixed. Actually, the outcomes are predetermined. Nikita Koloff had to get ready, had to prepare himself for that match. And this is all about how he got ready, what he did, how he put himself into this mode, and then how he sold himself to the audience as both a bad guy and a good guy. And I promise you, if you listen to the nuance of this interview, you're going to get amazing insight as to how to sell yourself to your audience. I'm joined today by the once legendary, but still famous, Nikita Koloff.
If you're legendary, aren't you always legendary?
Well, it depends.
Like, can't you not just be legendary for a minute?
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, just last weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina, I was blessed to be a part of a legendary wrestling autograph signing.
There you
Who
go.
Was there? So, tell me the guys who were there.
I had the pleasure of the Total Package, Lex Luger. Uh-huh. Let's see, Tully Blanchard.
Yep.
Tully Blanchard, Double A Arn Anderson.
Uh-huh.
My former nemesis, Magatier.
Oh, Magatier.
Wait a minute. Are people going to know who you are?
Of course they are.
Aren't they used to you speaking with an accent?
I'll introduce them in a minute.
Magnum TA. Yeah, there were a lot. I mean, just a lot. Some of the old announcers. Bob Cottle, one of the original announcers.
Ooh, I love Bob
Tony
Cottle.
Schiavone.
Yep.
Jim Ross. JR. Jim Ross. Just more guys.
A lot of people.
Paul Ellering,
the former
manager of the Road Warriors, yep. Legion of Doom, Paul Ellering, whose daughter is wrestling now. I did not know that. I met her. She was
there.
She's wrestling all over the world. So
the challenge that this is, I grew up as a fan of professional wrestling. And I mean, and I'm not talking about grew up. I'm talking about from the time I was a teenager, we would go to Atlantic City or Camden Convention Hall or the Philadelphia Arena to watch professional wrestling. Anthony Naraka, Bobo Brazil, Captain Lou Albano, father of Cyndi Lauper, and all of the people from that genre. The Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers, was the world heavyweight champion.
Original Nature Boy.
And growing up, Anthony Naraka was the original Jimmy Superfly Suka. Mm-hmm. All these guys were the Kangaroos were, they were the world heavyweight tag team champions.
Right.
And they were rotten to the core. So I grew up loving and hating professional wrestling because there were good guys and there were bad guys. So fast forward to the 80s, when my children were growing up, we would go to professional wrestling at the Philadelphia Arena. where the NWA was there, because I didn't like the other league with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and all those guys, but I loved the Rock and Roll Express. I loved the Road Warriors. I loved Jimmy Valiant, and I hated Nikita Koloff. I mean, I didn't dislike him. I hated him. He would bring chains into the ring and wreck people and beat the crap out of them. And here he is today, one of the nicest, gentlest souls on the planet that you would never think of as someone that would beat the crap out of somebody. But he specialized in that for literally a decade until he turned.
That's right.
Turning in wrestling is when you go from a bad guy to a good guy. And he turned in Charlotte. And the crowd went nuts. And not only was he the most hated bad guy, he became the most loved good guy.
Which was easier or more fun for you?
You know, I've been asked that question a lot. I feel thankful I got the opportunity to be on both sides of the tracks and experience both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost equal. I can't say I enjoyed one better than the other. I mean, I enjoyed being a bad guy because I was the epitome of evil. The commie Russian, you know, USA, USA kind of thing. And didn't have to sign autographs. Well, at least chose not to sign autographs, which made the fans hate me even more. And just that whole deal. And then go on the other side and become a fan favorite, as Jeffrey's referring to, and be able to, you know, kiss babies and hug, you know.
Wrestle with Dusty Rhodes.
Dream. Thou power too sweet to be thou, if you will.
He brought lisping back into popularity.
That's right, baby. Yeah, we were the super power. If you
okay,
good.
But now wait a second. Yeah. In the old days, they would interview him for Before the Thing, and he would come on, and here's this guy who is completely ripped. I mean, 285 pounds of no body fat, and he'd come on with a big chain around his neck, and they'd interview him to ask him about what was going to happen and who he was going to kick the crap out of, and this is what it would sound like. So, Nikita, I see you're wrestling Magnum T.A. Tell me what's going to happen in the ring tonight.
Mega T.A. Shatoeta, the Russian Nightmare, Nikita Koloff is going to destroy you, Mega T.A. That's what it would sound
okay.
like.
Okay. That is amazing.
And I would go, you mother. And that was like half of the word. And I mean, I would go into a rage, you know, and he would go into the ring or the squared circle and beat the crap out of him.
There are times I would actually utilize the chains by wrapping around their neck and hanging them over the rope. And,
wow.
And after the victory.
That's allowed?
After the victory, not beat the crap out of
him. But it doesn't matter because you're
the bad guy. I'm the bad guy, so I didn't have to pay attention to the ref. Because like even after the 1-2-3, after I destroyed the guy, that's why I did more of my damage, which would make the people even hate me even more.
Yeah.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was...
and he would get these guys, what they referred to in the ring as jobbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd get these, you know, nice white Anglo-Saxon Protestant guys and just rip them a brand new head.
And hence the name jobbers. Their job was to make someone like myself look good. That was their job. And they understood that going in. They knew that, understood that. And the Mulkey Brothers. Do you remember the Mulkey Brothers, Randy? They were in Charlotte at the Legends.
Oh, cool.
I hadn't seen them in years and years and years. And these are two of the jobbers who did unbelievable moves in the ring to make guys like me look good. If it hadn't been for those guys, seriously?
Yeah.
If it hadn't been for those guys, I wouldn't have had really half the success I had. Because they made us look so good on television that by the time we got to the arena to wrestle Ric Flair or Magnum T.A. or Sting or Lex Luger or one of the other guys, the job, it was half done. The match was already built because of how these jobbers would make us look good on television.
The storylines were amazing. I looked at professional wrestling as soap opera for men.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would every week it would be the continuing story. And what would happen is they'd have these Saturday television shows where they wouldn't have the championship matches, but Magnum T.A. would wrestle and he would win. And then Nikita would run out of the dressing room and beat the crap out of him in the ring when it's an unscheduled event. And then run back into the dressing room. People are booing and go knocking. And Magnum's like on the ground and breathing in pain.
Laid out.
Yeah. Oh, he totally laid out.
Yeah.
And then it was like, come to the Charlotte Arena at 8 p.m. on Friday. We're going to be, you know, that kind of crap. Yeah. It was so well promoted. It was the ultimate in wrestling promotion and the only way that it could have been done. Think about this. There was no internet. Mm-hmm. There was no way to promote it other than from one show to the next. And some people had newsletters and maybe there was a magazine. Yeah. But it was nothing that would do it other than word of mouth.
Well, in fact, you talked about my turn from bad guy to good guy. It actually, several things happened in Charlotte for me. I have a real affinity to Charlotte. It's where I got my break in professional wrestling in 1984. But there are a couple other key things. I mean, the birth of Nikita Koloff happened in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. My first ever match against the Nature Boy Ric Flair mm-hmm. happened in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the very first ever Great American Bash. My turn to good guy happened at the old Independence Arena. Yep. What's it now? Arena, whatever.
Oh, the Bojangle Arena.
Used to be Independence Arena. My turn happened there. Is he talking about with no internet? It was one of the best kept secrets in professional wrestling. Nobody knew. I knew, the promoter knew, and Dusty Rhodes knew who was going to be his mystery partner that night. Nobody knew until that night of the matches when I walked into the other dressing room to come out of that dressing room.
Because the good guys and the bad guys had separate dressing rooms.
Back in those days. Yeah, so it was, so when
do you think something like that could be kept a secret today with the power of the internet?
So, hold on 1 second. Let's talk about why are we doing this.
Yeah.
Nick had to sell himself as a character. And be bought as a character by literally hundreds of thousands or millions of fans. And they believed, people will still fly all over the world to see him believing he's a Russian. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Yeah, we met someone who loves you. And they're like, wait, he's not Russian?
Right,
exactly.
They still don't know.
Right. Even with the internet.
Right. That's living the character, but that's selling the character.
Yeah.
So he was able, by the characterization and by his antics and his actions, sell the fans on the fact that this guy's a rotten guy.
What was that like?
Come to find out, I didn't know this at the time. I mean, I didn't go to acting school. I had no amateur wrestling background, no professional training. The day I walked into the office in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I've come to learn the ones who excel the most, like in Hollywood films and that sort of thing, they call it method acting.
Okay.
In other words, the mm-hmm. actor...
You live the character.
The actor has the ability to mentally project him or herself into the role of that character. And that's what makes it... And I'm not putting myself on the same level as an Al Pacino.
Come on, do it.
It's just, okay. But
you're better than Al Pacino. He couldn't beat up his mother.
I love you, Jeffrey. Thank you. But on that level, if you understand on that level... why someone like him is so successful is because he has the ability to do that. Well, I didn't realize I was doing that, but when he talks about being able to sell the character, that's in essence what I did. I mean, I legally changed my name to Nikita Koloff. I got a Russian workbook. I got cassette tapes. I began to learn just a little enough of the language.
Wait, that's not your name?
It is my name.
Your name?
See, people still don't know who
exactly.
I really am.
But, wow.
Well, you know, I'm a Saul who became Paul. I had a name change.
Wow.
So let's really talk about the method acting.
Hmm.
Did you ever go to the gym to get ready?
I spent countless hours in the gym in preparation before I ever got that break.
Did you ever talk to anybody?
I did not talk to anybody in
the
gym.
What if they tried to talk to you?
I would grunt and groan at them.
You were in
character.
In character the whole time.
All the time.
24/7 outside of my own personal space. So if I was out in public anywhere, whether it was at the gym, a grocery store, a movie theater, a restaurant, at the arena.
Was it fun?
It was an amazing time.
So you loved it?
I absolutely loved it. It was an incredible.
Isn't that cool?
That's really cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, he would tell me about days at the gym where they would ask him for gym payment and he would grunt at him.
and walk away.
Yeah.
And leave them with a puzzled look on their face going, how are we going to get money out of this guy? He doesn't understand any English.
Exactly. Seriously.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, people were convinced. And again, I still run into people to this day, like you're talking about, who are convinced. So selling the character, selling myself, I just projected myself into that role for almost 12 years and lived it.
And here's the deal. It was part of his fabric. He recognized what he had to do as a performer, which sales is a performance. Mm. It's not a presentation. It's a performance. And he was able to convince the other guy bought. You bought his character. You bought into his process. And you know, when he was a good guy, you loved him. When he was a bad guy, you hated him. And when I first met him and told him how bad I hated him, he goes, well, I was doing my job. His job was to make people hate him, and he did a great job of it. I mean, millions of people hated it.
Yeah, as a bad guy, people had to buy into, right? Yeah. You're talking about sales. People had to buy into the fact that I was really from Russia, mm-hmm. buy into the fact that at one point I was touted the most hated guy in professional wrestling.
Yep.
At one point. So people had to buy into that fact. So when I made the switch and became a good guy, then it flipped. And now they had to buy into the fact that I was a good guy.
Interesting, though. They still called him the Russian Nightmare even when he was a good guy.
Yep.
Hmm. Well, he still kept the name.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I partnered with Dusty Rhodes with the American Dream. So mm-hmm. it just was a natural in terms of promotion, the American Dream and the Russian Nightmare creating the superpowers.
Cool.
Yeah, it was totally cool.
Yeah, it made for a great storyline. Yeah. It really did.
And so upon meeting him, even though I busted his balls when we first met him, it was
like beat him up?
No, he just
he tried.
He threw a few colorful words at me what he did.
But the bottom line was, it was an honor. You know, I'm meeting one of my idols. You know, it's like... hard to explain, but when you grow up with it and you're a fan of it, it's, you know, think of the people who you've met in your life who you totally respected and admired for what they did. And that's how I felt about Nikita. And fortunately, through one thing or another, we actually became friends, wrote together, talked together.
Oh, yeah, you guys have a book.
We have a book, Wrestling with Success. Yeah. And
where do people find that book?
You can't. You got to call our office, 704-333-1112, and we will send you a double autographed copy.
And we will get it to you. And the interesting thing is...
It's only $1,000.
Right.
Well, cash.
We can discount it if you get multiple more than one.
Yeah, if you buy two, it's $40.
That's right. But there's a mutual admiration there because I had post-wrestling, I'd gotten into some different business ventures, and one of them was a television network that was featuring Jeffrey as part of that network. And so really when we met, there was a mutual admiration there because I already knew who he was when we met, the day we met and he introduced himself. Of course, he had the first colorful words and choice words for me.
Shocking. Jeffrey Gittimer?
No, I decided to put him out of wrestling. That was my major decision.
That's right. Fortunately, there was no metal chairs involved particular day.
Or trash cans.
Although we do have a video of me picking him up for a body slam that maybe you'll get to witness and actually see one day.
Yeah. I think what
that
we should
is
do is
video.
Put it up on YouTube. Put the... the video up, I think we're going to see it right now. Oh, my God.
Cool.
And it was not planned, by the way. He tried to avoid it for a long time, and I looked for an opening and an opportunity to get him by surprise. And so you'll be able to tell that, but just by the expression on his face.
Cool.
Yeah. If you go on YouTube, go to my YouTube channel, Buy Gittimer, BuyGittimer, or, you know, it's YouTube/ByGittimer. And you'll be able to see it. We're going to put the word wrestling in the title. So you'll be able to search for
Maybe
it by wrestling
Nikita.
If you want. Yeah. First of all, look at the shirt I'm wearing.
Yeah, look at mine. It's like I just came off the beaches of
it's
Hawaii
like
or
yeah.
something.
Decades. Huh?
You looked a little fat there, actually.
I was a little more. I was a little more beefed up back then. I don't know if fat would be the right word for it. Jeffrey,
how about corpulent?
But... Yeah, you don't look fat.
And so we're talking about, and I go, you know, wrestling's fake.
I'm more beefed up.
And he goes, yeah, let me show you how fake it is.
Well, which is funny because you know
he
that,
takes his microphone off and he comes over to go, no.
Oh, this is amazing.
I mean,
he's like
totally resisting.
So cool.
He's like totally trying to resist.
Look. And the video stops right there.
But I gave him no choice in the as you can see.
Is there a take two?
No, there's no take two on that.
I was the one take guy.
I mean, right now.
Oh, could be. But I was known as the one take guy, whether it was an interview. Now, here's something interesting about our business, too. Talk about selling. was the wrestling business is totally different now. In fact, I heard lots of fans over the weekend say, you know, and over time, that was the golden era of wrestling.
Yeah,
it will never be repeated, you know, kind of thing. Because it's a totally different business now. People, if they say, can you compare the two? I said, well, I would compare it this way. It used to be wrestling with a flavor of entertainment. Now it's entertainment
with a flavor
of wrestling. You might see some wrestling.
Yeah.
But the point being this, in those days, you want to talk about selling. In those days, there was no scripts for interviews. The matches were predetermined, but even though we had a predetermined outcome, if Ric Flair is at one end of the arena and I'm at the other end of the arena and we step in the ring, we know what the outcome is. But if I'm wrestling him for 45 minutes, which many times I did, mm-hmm. we spontaneously told a story, sold the match in the ring that would make sense to lead into the outcome. Mm-hmm. In other words, there was no scripting mm-hmm. of match from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
We had to be able to go in, spontaneously wow. tell a story. And for the fan to buy into it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
To buy into the match. To be able to set the outcome so that they would buy into the outcome.
And I totally bought into it.
Yeah.
Many other people.
Yes.
No, but I mean, we would go. I had a friend who was a ticket guy at the Philadelphia Arena, and he could get me front row seats in the balcony. So I literally overhang the square circle, and I could see everything and everyone.
Yeah, that's
great. And I took the kids.
Yeah.
You know, everyone went to the wrestling match.
That's cool.
And it would come to town like once a month.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so post-wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
What are you...
No, I don't want to go post-wrestling.
He wants to stay... Well, let me elaborate one more thing about the buying and selling. And so if that's what we did in the matches... We did the same thing with the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now, like, their interviews are basically scripted. They have screenwriters. Mm. They script out the whole entire match. I script out the whole entire interview. And so, like, we just were doing a minute ago with the Magnum TA. That would be it. Tony Schiavone would say, you're going to be against Magnum TA in Greensboro Coliseum. What are you going to do? You know, and bam, you know, that when that red light comes on, we cut the interview. And most of the time, it was one take. I was somewhat joking about that. But most of the time... I'd hit the interview on one take. There'd be some times we'd have to redo it.
But how many times would you wrestle in a month?
To put it in perspective, in that era, in 1986, for example, I had 454 matches.
Wow.
And there's only 365 days. So keep in mind that he would wrestle once in the morning and once in the afternoon and once at night on Saturdays.
Because we'd have to do, you know, back then it was Superstation, WTBS.
Wow.
So we'd have to be in studio ready to roll tape at 8 a.m. to shoot 3 hours of television taping. And then we might jet down to Columbus, Georgia and have an afternoon show and maybe back to the Omni in Atlanta and have a show that evening as well. So... The weekends were pretty jam packed with events, so it was crazy.
And tickets were hard to come by.
Yeah, it was quite an era.
I mean, I never went to the Philadelphia Arena where it wasn't jammed, ever.
Yeah.
So I feel privileged to have lived in that era, and I feel privileged to have hated you and loved you.
And the feeling's mutual, I think. No. Actually, I never hated you. I've just always loved you, Jeffrey. Appreciate it.
So this is our challenge now. Nick will be a regular guest on the show, whether it's virtual or in the studio. And we're going to talk about how to sell yourself to others.
Mm.
Not about selling your product, not about selling your service. Literally how to sell yourself so that others buy you first and then buy your product or your service.
Yeah.
The first sale that's made is the salesperson.
Yeah.
But he had to sell himself on his self first. That's
right.
What's so cool to
me.
Like you became in character
right.
all the time for you.
Right.
Let me tell you how good he was. People bought who he was not.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's a good explanation. And I would just tag on to that to say, you know, whatever line of work somebody's in, whatever line of work they're in, that's right. If you can sell yourself first, they buy into you. In other words, you build that relation. It's relational marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You market yourself and they buy into you, then whatever it is you're selling, that just comes as a natural progression.
But they're more willing to accept your message.
Right.
Correct.
Just a natural progression then. If they buy into you and they appreciate who you are and what you have to offer just becomes almost a natural course of action.
Regardless of how much I hated him, I tuned in every week. And, you know, I just remembered in Philadelphia where I first started, it was called Fabiani's Mat Time. Mm. And every Saturday they would have, you know, guys come in that would lead up to the live events in the same way you did it. That was when Vince McMahon's father was the...
Right, when he was running the show.
Exactly.
Yeah, so... Cool.
Yeah. All right, so you're going to be a regular guest on our show. How do people find you?
Oh,
well, that's a good question. If they run, you know, at this point want to read more of the story, I mean, there is a website, NikitaKoloff.com, and or they, you know, just Google Nikita Koloff. Even if they don't spell it right.
It'll still pop up.
Google, they can do some Google. You. Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel. I've got some just different video, old video, wrestling, a few wrestling videos on my
website.
They're
incredibly cool. Just go watch all of them.
Yeah, my website. There's different photo galleries and just a lot of things. Cool.
We should send the video of Nikita and me to his thing so he can post it as well.
So put it up on a link. So yeah, so it's been the wrestling career was an interesting part of the story, and even as he and I have, like, we're talking about writing the book together and just different projects, different things we've done together, or just hanging out, you know, and just spending time together and building that friendship and that relationship has been pretty awesome. And post wrestling, where the path has taken me has been amazing. I've been fortunate to travel to, I think, 28 different countries so far, with many others on site. Yeah, and just doing a variety of things. Still doing, like I said, the Wrestling Legends events. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of a variety of different ministry works now all over the world, and speaking and school assemblies, motivational stuff, just a variety of things. I've been blessed.
He's a good guy. There ain't many good guys. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
He doesn't even lie when he plays golf.
I don't kick the ball towards the hole. I actually try to hit it in the cup. That's right. That's right.
So. All right. Well, we're honored.
Yeah, we're very honored to have
here.
You today. Thank you very much, the great Nikita Koloff. Wow. So that was as good as it gets, I think.
That was as good as it gets.
Yeah. I love the guy. Professional wrestling is a whole other sport. They call it entertainment, but believe me, the guys that do that have physical prowess beyond your wildest imaginations.
Yeah.
They play hurt. They wrestle hurt. They have to have incredible on-screen talent. You know, they sell their story. They sell their performance in the ring. I mean, they're amazing guys. And I feel fortunate just to be pals with them.
I love when Nikita was telling us that he literally had the character Nikita take over his whole life. He allowed it himself to really get into character. He wouldn't go anywhere without pretending to only speak Russian.
Right, and 285 pounds of zero body fat, like 8% body fat, something crazy.
Yeah.
So when he makes a muscle and you pinch the bottom of his arm, nothing happens. So what I'd like you
What's
to do
going
is...
What's on there?
No. If you're listening right now, make a muscle and pinch the bottom of your arm and see if there's a little
I'll
bit wiggling
yours.
Around. Yeah, exactly. He's just a tremendous physical specimen. Plus, it's fun to watch. You have your favorite characters. It's like soap opera for men.
It is soap opera for men.
Yeah. You tune in every week to see what happened. So we do the show live, which means our energy has to be at 152% at all times. So what we do is we drink Death Wish coffee. Death Wish Coffee is the world's strongest coffee. It's made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans, and it's a secret formula. SpongeBob.
They have 100%, no bullshit, money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. So.
No. I drink it when I wake up in the morning.
I drink it every day. I have amazing. A cup of Death Wish every day, and then another cup in our podcast studio.
Exactly.
Love it.
So seven cups a week,
yeah,
Monday through Friday, to Saturday and Sunday, and then an eighth cup when it's like Hanukkah. You have an eighth cup when we do the show.
If you are not yet drinking Death Wish coffee, you are missing out. Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com. Our big topic for this show, Jeffrey, is millennials.
Well, come on. Nikita was pretty big.
Nikita was huge. I mean, he's amazing.
So our second big topic.
There you go. Okay. Our next big topic.
That's it.
I'll go with that. but you know, it's a big topic because a lot of people, number one, a lot of people are talking about how important and influential millennials are. And so millennials is going to be our next focus.
Oh, and, these kids.
And okay. Also, you're getting ready for your latest Gittimer Gold webinar. It's coming up this Friday.
Right.
And it's all about hiring and dealing with the millennial sales force.
Yes, it is.
Plus, if you want to find out more, you can go to jeffreygittimer.com/gold and you can learn all about Jeffrey Gittimer's Gold, his webinar series, and his upcoming millennial webinar, which is going to be amazing. But also, the other reason we're bringing up this topic is because I'm about to release a series of tips for millennial salespeople on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. It's hosted by myself. These tips are hosted by myself.
Wait, you are a millennial, aren't you?
Well, sort of.
You're on the cusp.
I am a millennial technically.
But not personally.
But I don't always associate myself with millennials.
Right. Well, there's a big difference. You actually pick the phone up.
I do. I do. Okay. So Jeb Blunt and I recorded these webinars, and I'm going to be releasing them on my YouTube channel now. But I want to give you guys, our loyal Sell or Die listeners, a sneak peek. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here it is. I am honored to be here with you, Jeb Blunt of Sales Gravy. Jeb is the author of Fanatical Prospecting. That's his latest book. If you have not yet read a copy of Fanatical Prospecting, what are you waiting for? This is like the greatest book. You got to go get it, buy it, read it, learn from it, and implement his strategies. Jeb Blunt, it is a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So as we think about millennials and what they need to know about sales, I know that there are a lot of sales managers, sales leaders, executives, sales vice presidents that are wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth over millennials and how to work with millennials. And this episode, this webinar is really not for you. It's really for the millennial listener, if you're on the podcast or if you're watching. And this is a lesson in the things that are important for you to be successful in sales. And some of these lessons are what you need to know to be successful in life.
Mm-hmm.
And the first tip is around technology and people. So if you're a millennial and you grew up with a smartphone in your hand, you don't really have problems with technology. When you think about social media and you think about how to use different communication channels, this is really easy for you. And you spend a lot of your time chatting with your friends and chatting with people that you work with through text, through Skype, through Facebook, through Twitter, through Instagram. There's a lot of folks using Snapchat, and you're used to that. The thing that I find most often about millennials that they miss in sales is that they treat human beings, the interaction with human beings, in the abstract. So I believe that millennials, from a social awareness, from an empathy standpoint, they really care about their fellow human being. But when it comes to actually dealing with human beings, it's a lot of time there's a wall and there's a hands off. So my tip is pretty simple. If you want to be great in sales, if you want to be really good in business, if you want to be great in life, if you want to have a tremendous amount of success, what you have to do is begin working on your own emotional intelligence skills and your ability to deal with other people. And a couple of things that you want to learn how to do is, one is to listen and be aware and tuned into other people's emotions, and also be tuned into your own emotions. And the thing that you have to put together with these two things, your emotions and other people's emotions, is understanding how your communication style, your preferred communication style, impacts other people and how they feel about you. Because when you're in sales, one of the things that we know to be true is that people are going to buy you and how they feel about you before they ever buy your product.
Yeah, and they can't pick that up from email. The tone doesn't come across. The facial expressions doesn't come across. I mean, we're doing this face-to-face for a reason. So we could see each other and, you know, you just smiled because you can feel the energy. And you can't feel that same energy over email, maybe over Snapchat, but your customers probably are not on Snapchat waiting for your snap. So I totally agree with that.
So that was pretty good information. Jeb Blunt is a leader. He is a brilliant guy, and I totally respect him, and you did a great job of talking to him.
Oh, thanks, Jeffrey.
If you want more of these kind of tips, you have to subscribe to Jen's YouTube channel. She is Sales in a New York Minute, or Sales in a NY Minute, And you can find her on YouTube, Jennifer Gluckow, G-L-U-C-K-O-W. Go search, go find it, and go subscribe. Now, I'd like to throw in my two cents about millennials because I am on the cusp. First of all, some of them are my grandkids.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were on the cusp too.
No, I'm on the cusp. I'm on the cusp of bicentennials.
Got it.
But I think that so much is unknown about it that I'm going to try to give you some known. I'm going to do it in my webinar on Friday, but it'll be you can listen to it live or you can listen to it when we post it up. But the challenge is this. Most of the people that don't understand millennials or don't want to understand millennials are technologically behind those millennials. They can't open up their laptop. They don't know all the tricks on a smartphone. They've never Snapchatted. They probably don't tweet. They're putting themselves in a deficit position, and the millennial is looking at this guy. The guy's an old, you know, he's an old geezer. He doesn't know shit about what's happening on technology.
You want to snap this?
No, I'm good. we can snap it if you want to.
Okay.
I think that the average person who is in a hiring position for a sales team, the average person who's in a hiring position for a sales team doesn't understand what the millennial wants. He wants a great job. He wants someone that will help him learn. He wants someone who is technologically even. So if you're behind and you're the boss, you're in a deficit position with that kid. The kid has to be taught that a sale is not going to be made on email. The kid has to be taught that there has to be an ability for him or her to persuade the other person emotionally. And the kid has to be taught that there's a combination of non-vocal communication and vocal communication to be able to create some kind of emotional engagement that ends up in a sale.
So many millennials, just FYI, like myself, don't consider ourselves kids, right?
So, no, sorry, I do because I have kids older than them.
Okay.
I have kids that are not millennials. But okay, so young people, how about
there
that?
There you go. Young people is right. Good. Or you can just say millennials.
Yeah, or kids.
Yeah, no.
But you have to look at yourself. If you're a millennial, look at it this way. Stop judging other people by their technological capability and start judging them by their wisdom because they may know more than you do. That's number one. Number two, stop putting people into categories. And, you know, the guy never tweeted or the guy doesn't, you know, whatever the guy or the woman doesn't do, don't worry about that. Worry about what they do. Worry about how they can help you. Worry about how they can teach you because your college professors weren't millennials. Your high school teachers weren't millennials. You listen to them.
Mm-hmm. So the way I think about it is like if I'm giving a talk or I'm going into a customer, I'm going to tailor it to who they are.
Of course.
And I'm going to approach them in the way that I think is going to get through to them the most. Mm-hmm. If I'm selling to someone else who might be a millennial who may prefer email communication,
right?
Okay, then I may communicate with them on email. But if I'm selling to you and I know you specifically don't like email communication or want it, I would pick up the phone and call you.
Okay, so let's talk about the two kind of people.
Okay.
The millennial making the sale and the guy hiring the millennial. Let's separate those two things.
Okay.
If I'm hiring the millennial, I'm going to ask them questions about what they would like to achieve. I'm going to ask them questions about what their expectations are. Mm-hmm. Because as you know, they all have this what's in this for me kind of thing, this entitlement.
Doesn't
kind of,
everybody?
Nah. Not yes. As bad as, no, it's not, that's not the way it used to be. So
I agree. It used to be that you were happy to have the job.
Yeah,
and now,
or you sold yourself.
And now your millennials are more choosy about where they're going to work.
Right, why should I work here? This guy's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the way, if you're an asshole, you're probably not going to be a good prospect to hire millennials. So, but I think you have to look at this from the perspective of this is the future of your employee and of your employee base. So you might as well learn, number one, how to communicate with them. Number two, how to help them. Like a kid walks in and say, look.
Young person.
Okay. A young person walks in and the boss has to say, here's how we help you succeed.
Exactly.
Not that's what this job is all about.
If I had a boss and my boss said that to me, I would be so excited. I got there my first day and my boss said, here's how he's going to help.
I am forever perplexed why companies don't tell a prospective employee how they can succeed rather than what's this company all about. Let me tell you all about this company.
The history.
Dude, I don't give a shit about that. What I care about is how am I gonna make it? Mm-hmm. And not necessarily make just money.
So wait, you're saying you care what's in it for you?
Of course I do. I care what's in it for me. They care what's in it for them. Talk to them on their level. Mm-hmm. Talk to them about, and that's for literally for anybody. But there's another big secret, a deep, dark secret of how to get that millennial to perform beyond your expectations, even beyond their expectations. And you can find that out by tuning into that webinar.
JeffreyHimmer.com/gold.
And sign up, register. It's very inexpensive, but it's very well worth that investment.
Thanks.
So listen, Jenny, we have had a really good show this week. I am enjoying Sell or Die Now way beyond my own
personal. I look forward to Wednesdays.
I know.
It's like every day of the week I have a special thing. Tuesday's networking, Tuesday schmooze day, Wednesday is Sell or Die Day. I love it.
But we're getting more sophisticated at it. We're getting more listeners, and we're creating more impact for the sales guy that's out there, the saleswoman that's out there, the millennial that's out there, the young person that's out there.
You know,
there,
our listeners could actually really help us out. Not enough people are listening.
Right.
So if you could share this with everyone you know.
Both your friends.
Yeah, both, all two of them. That would be amazing. But in the meantime, thanks for listening to Sell or Die. We're back live next week at our regular time, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. And subscribe to us on iTunes. Come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
And thank you to our major guests, Nikita Koloff and Jeb Blunt. Our producer is Doug Branson. Our technical director is Chris Hill. And
until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.